This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
It is 7:44. Anthony Reich, a very good morning to you. How are you?
Boker Tov. So Israel is moving into winter, and that means a bit of rain. And we have had a little rain over the past little while. In fact, we had quite some heavy rain yesterday across various parts of Israel. And in particular, Gaza was flooded.
Lots
of pictures and videos.
Is that because Israel opened up one of those dams again?
Or just sent all the water down that way. Ironically, on this occasion, Israel wasn't being blamed for the flood. Okay. But in fact, the leadership in Gaza were called into question. And in fact, some of the local authority leaders around Gaza were forced to resign yesterday over this flood issue. Lots and lots of pictures coming out of Gaza showing streets being flooded, flowing water through a hospital in Gaza, through the interior terrible. Part of the hospital in Gaza, which is really not good. And on this occasion, the local leadership really being held to account, because the local residents are saying that they really haven't done enough to prepare for the rainy season to ensure that the infrastructure is in place. Of course, flooding occurs in Israel as well from time to time. There is always this issue, this dilemma about whether it's worthwhile investing in drainage systems in Israel, considering that the rainy season is so short and so little rain is actually received. And is it really worthwhile to invest large sums of money for a system that gets used very, very seldom during the year? The problem is that when it rains here, it really doesn't mess around. And you get some very, very heavy rainfalls. And as such, drainage systems are essential. And the good news is that a very high proportion of the water that flows even down the drains in the streets and things like that is ultimately recycled and reused, agricultural purposes and things like that. So the water doesn't all go to waste. But unfortunately, Gaza was a particular victim yesterday of flooding. Another little snippet that's come out is unfortunately some bad news about Shalom Sofer, who was repeatedly stabbed in the abdomen last month at a grocery store in an Arab village that he attended, in the Palestinian village of Al-Funduk. He was in the grocery store when somebody came in and stabbed him repeatedly. It was officially classified as a terror attack. He was quite seriously injured and was hospitalized. He then seemed to recover. It took a few weeks, and he slowly but surely recovered. And in fact, last week was released from hospital and was able to spend time at home with his friends and family, having a Shabbat meal. And then unfortunately on Monday, one of his wounds began hemorrhaging, and they were unable to save his life. So he was unfortunately buried yesterday. Another victim, unnecessary victim of an attack, a terror attack, only 63 years old, and something that could really be avoided. And my last little snippet before we get into the main news is just coming out of COP27, the climate change meeting conference that's taking place in the Egyptian resort of Sharm el-Sheikh. Lots and lots and lots of issues around participation by other Arab countries involving Israeli government officials. We saw, we spoke yesterday about the Tunisian prime minister, who was caught smiling and exchanging a few words with Israeli President Isaac Herzog. Then there was a regional meeting called by the presidents of Cyprus and Egypt, involving all countries in the Middle East. And that includes Israel, but it also included Lebanon, and it also included Iraq. And so there was the scene of Tamar Zandberg, the outgoing Israeli Minister for Environmental Protection, sitting with her Israeli flags in front of her, and two seats away, the Lebanese delegation, and across the room, the Iraqi delegation. And it's just been amazing to see how the social media has been lit up by comments from, in the most part, is the Arab participants in social media making disparaging comments about why their government officials would be seen in the same room as Israeli officials, and why this might lead potentially to normalization. Was normalization agreed upon in that short conversation between the Tunisian prime minister and the Israeli president? He was even seen to introduce himself to the Lebanese president. Prime Minister, the Lebanese Prime Minister, who was also in attendance, drew a lot of comments. And it's a little sad, I think, because these types of conferences, because it's so old-fashioned,
Anthony. That approach is so done. You know, this anti-normalization with Israel, it's so 1948. You know, I think it's time to move on. The rest of the world, and many parts of the Arab world, has moved on to everybody's benefit. It's quite remarkable. And I was looking at the body language at this conference where the president met with some of these leaders. And I can tell you that there's a very natural relationship across some of these borders.
I agree with you. And I was interested to see that when President Herzog made his address to the conference, and bearing in mind that the host country is, of course, an Arabic-speaking country, he made some of his comments to the conference in Arabic. He spoke in Arabic. He made references to the Quran during the time of his talk, and as well made references to our Tanakh, talking about some of the sources of the information that he was given concerning climate change and our responsibility towards the environment in general. And I thought that was a great gesture and one that's very inclusive.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought absolutely remarkable. The process of forming the next government begins this afternoon.
Right. So the president needs to get back from Sharm el-Sheikh, because he is now the man in the middle in terms of getting things moving to form a new government. And we understand that this afternoon he will begin by meeting nominated delegates from each of the main parties, and the main question that he will ask each representation of each of the parties that comes to the presidential home to meet with him is, who would you nominate to be the prime minister? That's one of the main questions that he will ask, and each delegation is expected to name one person or another, except for the fact that we understand that the Arab parties are not going to nominate anybody. And also, we understand that Yisrael Beiteinu, which is the party under the leadership of Avigdor Lieberman, also intends not to recommend anybody as prime minister. But in terms of who will be saying what, we expect that there will be an equivalent of 64 seats from the Knesset. The representatives of those seats will nominate who we expect to be prime minister, Netanyahu, of course, leader of the Likud. And it's interesting to note that the modern Orthodox party, which comprises three different parties, three different organizations, came together to run under one list. So one would expect there to be a single representative sent to the president's home to talk about who they would nominate. But that's in fact not the case. They are splitting up into their three constituent parts in terms of going to meet with the president. Their meetings will take place on Friday. So we understand that today, Likud, Yesh Atid, and the National Unity Party of the Arab List, and Shas, are due to meet with the president. Tomorrow, representatives of the United Torah Judaism Party, the religious Zionist Party, and Yisrael Beiteinu, Otzma Yehudit, and some of the other Arab parties. And then finally on Friday, a Labour with the Religious Zionist Party. The Religious Zionist Party will be tomorrow, but Labour and Noam will meet with the president on Friday. So that is the current process. There have been some rumours from behind the scenes that the president is trying somehow to engineer a national unity government from trying to influence people from outside of the Likud bloc to potentially join the Likud-led government, particularly Benny Gantz and possibly even Yair Lapid. So there have been rumors that the president has been trying to influence those individuals to potentially join a national unity government. The presidential residence, the president's office has formally denied that that's the case. And of course, the president's not really allowed to get involved in party politicking as such, although in the past we have seen the president quite actively involved in trying to encourage people to come together just in order to form a government. But the president has denied that. And in fact, representatives from Gantz and Yair Lapid have also denied that that's been the case. But the rumors from behind the scenes also suggest that the incoming Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, is a little concerned about the power of the Religious Zionist Party from within his coalition, and that he's working somehow to try to reduce their influence and to reduce the power that they may have. There have been rumors that he's been trying to encourage parties from outside of the bloc to come in order to reduce the power of the Religious Zionist Party. There are concerns that Bezalel Smotrich may want to lay claim to the finance ministry. There are rumors that Benjamin Netanyahu has asked Shas leader Aryeh Deri to ask for the finance ministry. There is a slight problem with that because Aryeh Deri himself has been convicted of a fraud and has been convicted of moral turpitude, and therefore one wonders whether he has any ability to become the Minister of Finance, given the background
he has.
Yeah, well, I think legally he probably is allowed. I think he's served his time and he's done what he needs to do in order to overcome
that. But the fact that he's got a criminal record doesn't legally preclude him from being Minister of Finance? That sounds a bit odd.
Apparently not. And, you know, I need to check that. There are some questions that have been asked about that. And there are questions being asked about Bezalel Smotrich's suitability to be Minister of Finance, because I don't think he's had any experience which would be even vaguely remotely connected to being Minister of Finance of a country like Israel. So lots and lots of issues in the background which will need to be overcome, but obviously the politicking really going crazy behind the scenes in terms of people jockeying for position, jockeying for ministries, jockeying for all kinds of government jobs. But in the meantime, the job falls now to the president to meet with all of the parties between now and Friday, and then to invite somebody, we believe it will be Benjamin Netanyahu, to invite somebody to form a government, and they will have, I think, 21 days in which they will be able to do that and present it to the Knesset. So those are really the next steps as they stand right now.
This is a fascinating story. Israel's largest ever shipment of Tesla vehicles is due to arrive today.
2,500 Model 3s are due to be delivered to the port of Ashdod today, and apparently another consignment of around 2,500 Model 3s also due within the next few weeks. And that's really not even the end of the story, because apparently that's only part of about 10,000 to 12,000 new electric cars of various brands that are due to land in Israel over the next few weeks. Fascinatingly, most of these cars, and especially the Teslas, are coming from China, from Tesla's factory in Shanghai. And it seems as if though the leasing and rental companies are taking a lot of these vehicles. They're very, very interested in using the electric vehicles. And I think there's a rush at the moment to get electric cars through the door, because beginning next year, the purchase tax in Israel on electric vehicles is going to double from 10 to 20%. So up until now, there's been something of an advantage. The government have made it worth people's while to try and reduce the costs of the purchase of electric vehicles, but that advantage is now going away and the purchase tax is going to go up to 20%. And so therefore it seems like there's a huge rush to try and get these cars through the door before the increase in purchase tax. Just as a side, completely side story, I heard a fascinating article yesterday about the massive theft at the moment of electric vehicles in Israel. Apparently this is a thing. People who own electric cars are very concerned about their cars being stolen because so many of them are being stolen. And we are told that the reason why cars are being stolen is so that the gangs who steal these cars can get hold of the battery from the car, and they use the battery to power marijuana growing car plants instead of being connected to the electricity grid, which immediately shows up, and they can therefore be tracked because of their increased use of electricity. So to try and grow marijuana off the grid, they're using electric car batteries for this purpose, and that's why electric cars are being stolen. Who would have thought?
That is insane. Look, if it was in South Africa, we would be stealing them to power our homes. But that, I guess, is something completely different. We don't have a lot of time, but I'm a little hysterical about the story. Not that I've been to the Kinneret lately, but the Minister of Health is concerned that an eye-attacking parasite is present in the Kinneret. Do I need to panic?
No. Just get your goggles out.
Right.
Because apparently they suspect that there's presence of this microsporidia, which is some sort of a parasitic fungi in the Kinneret. 29 people have already been hospitalized with eye problems. And the link between those people is that at least most of them seem to have been swimming in the Kinneret. And so the health ministry has now launched an epidemiological investigation, from which it has emerged that obviously some of the bathers had been swimming in different beaches, had been swimming in the Kinneret at different places, and that at the moment the ministry is saying that anybody who swims in the Kinneret is advised to wear goggles, protective gear, whatever, in order to avoid contact between the water and their eyes. And it seems as if though this is a real thing. So just a warning to people who intend to swim in the Kinneret, even though there's been rain, it's still not bad weather and I think still suitable for swimming. So yeah, use your goggles.
Indeed, use your goggles. It is 8 o'clock. Anthony Wright, thank you as always. We'll catch you tomorrow morning at 7:45. I'm Howard Feldman. Good morning.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.